Welcome to The Better Side, interviews about hope and delivering change in an era of fear and uncertainty. I'm Eoin Reardon, and this show is brought to you in conjunction with Near FM. So be sure to rate and review this podcast on iTunes. Well, my guest today is Valerie Mulcahy, winner of 10 senior All-Ireland football titles with Cork and an outspoken advocate for gender equality in sport and LGBT rights in society. Valerie, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Valerie, the first question I have to ask you is that I was actually at a Shells ladies game during the year against Cork City, and I was just flicking through the team sheets and I saw your name. I didn't realise you're also a soccer player.
I am. I used to play a lot of soccer when I was in college, and well, I started in fourth year of school with the club. I gave up hockey and started soccer, and then when I went to college I got the opportunity to play with the Irish student team, so we got to go to the World Student Games in South Korea. And then I suppose it came to I had to make a choice basically between football and soccer, because they would have run around the same times. So I chose the Gaelic football because it was a bit closer to my heart. But about 5 years ago I played with Cork City in its inaugural year of the National League, the Women's National League. And then this year I decided kind of halfway through the season that I would go back playing. And I really enjoyed it, yeah. So I retired from one sport but took up another one.
Because for some people, like, it's one thing to be a gender equality advocate, and it's another thing to be an LGBT advocate, but playing soccer can be a bit too much for some people, you know?
Why, because women?
Yeah, no, because some people can be pretty unforgiving about playing the beautiful game, but that's not your experience.
Oh, yeah, you get that comment if it's foreign sports, but no, the news is well received, and in the school I'm in, actually, more students came up to me talking about my Cork City signing than any of my All-Ireland wins, so that was a bit surprising, but welcome.
Come here, you're an absolute legend in the ladies' game and Gaelic football in general. And I'd be somebody who's been supporting the Dubs for a long time, but I just want to get a sense of what is it about this team, this epic team that you have been a member of. I know you're retired now from the inter-county scene and that, yeah. But I just want to take you back maybe to three games I remember. One is the 2011 quarterfinal against Dublin. You're 3-10 to 2-7 down with 16 minutes left and you win. 2013 quarterfinal, 2-12 to 9 points down, you get 1-10 without reply. 2-14 final, 10 points down, 15 minutes left, you win it out. What's fascinating to me about your side is not just about how wonderful you are as individual players and collectively as a team, but that even in those moments when you've won so much and you've achieved so much together, there's never a point where you go, that any player on the pitch goes, do you know something, we've won a lot and we seem to be really up against it here and there's only a few minutes left. Nobody in any part of the field decides to let it go. Where does that ethic come from?
I think the ethic was kind of nurtured on the training pitch and with our coach Eamon Ryan, and we would have worked really hard on the training pitch and brought that into our games. And we were fortunate to have Eamon involved, and we were a young group, impressionable, and we had a few kind of natural leaders, and I think the work rate was always there. And then the understanding that we could win things came with winning. And I just feel that we're a very competitive group. Probably the fact we hadn't won anything, a lot of us underage or, you know, things weren't going great for years, you know, that was in the back of our heads always, and we were always grateful for when we did come together and things did go well. So we knew the bad times, which helped us to enjoy the good times. And I think just an exceptional group of players who were very committed, dedicated, worked really hard, and were very honest with themselves and their work rate and with everyone else. And I think on the pitch we always knew that everyone would give their best, and that's all you can ask of anyone, and we managed to do that and have success. And I love you referring back to those games against Dublin, because, you know, most other teams would be dead and buried, but we just kept going. We kind of didn't know how to lose or didn't know how to stop playing, really, so we just kept going. Did what, like, we had no real game plan or anything, so we just relied on our hard work and our kind of our football brain and try to do the right thing. So when we had the ball, and yeah. You know, psychologically, I think once we knew that we could come back, we were in those positions again against the same opposition. So definitely, the mentality played an element to us winning, and the fact that we knew we could come back, and, you know, there was that momentum shift definitely in the All Ireland final, and as well in that quarter final 2013. where we sensed that the tide was turning and that we were, you know, coming again, and we knew that, you know, we had it in us to win because we'd done it before. So, you know, we were drawing on the knowledge and the evidence that we had done it, so that it was possible to do it again. And I think maybe that was in Dublin's minds as well, you know, that they probably rehashed some of those bad memories that they had against
kind
us.
Of the here we go again feeling, yeah. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
what's remarkable about you, it's a team that's so dominant, but you are very respected as a team. There isn't ill feeling about the Cork Ladies footballers at all, from what I can sense, is that there's just a massive admiration for what you've achieved. But it's interesting you're talking about the honesty and integrity. Does that come from the management down?
I think it works both ways, but you know, it's definitely like the true barometer of a coach is how, you know, the team, they can portray what the coach is trying to get at. And we definitely had honesty, and Eamon would have been a very honest person and always wanted us to play football and never focused on any negative tactics or anything like that. So, you know, we kind of portrayed that, and that came from Eamon. But also I think all of us were very competitive, and we just kind of grew up in that environment that was supportive of hard work, and we were rewarded for that. So we just banked on that, really.
And do you feel you've gotten the credit you deserved as probably one of the best sporting teams of modern Irish sport? Do you feel you've gotten the credit?
It was a pinnacle moment when we won the RTE Team of the Year. That was a massive moment because, you know, for us in women's sport, I think you do have to win a lot more in order to be recognised. Like, we really had to win five in a row before we got some recognition, whereas the men's team in the county would win one and everyone would be out, you know, and talking about them and knowing about their win. So in the women's sports, you nearly have to do extra to get the notice. But are we recognised as much? I think we have huge respect, so that's palpable. I speak to many people who often come up and, you know, are grateful and thankful that the pleasure that we've gave them when they were watching us. The likes of Christy Ring there has a monumentum and different things. And I think it would be fitting if that was given to us as a team. Maybe now you couldn't have it as a team, but, you know, the likes of Breach Corkery and Rena Buckley, who have more All-Ireland medals than anyone else, you know, that'll never be seen again. Like, 16 All-Ireland medals, even 17. So many you could hardly remember. But, you know, I think it would be fitting if they got, you know, like what Sonia Sullivan got in Cove, a lovely commissioned piece. I think that would be... that would be right.
So I was reading a piece that you were interviewed earlier in the year in The Examiner, and you kind of spoke out a little bit about your feeling about gender inequality in the game, and you made reference to a couple of All-Ireland finals that have been pushed back because of hurling replays and that. Is that something you feel strongly about? I mean, you've mentioned in there about the comparison with the men's game and what they would, the Cork team, if they were to achieve success on the senior level, what they would get versus the women's game. Do you feel that things are improving, or do you feel that inequality is as bad as it ever was?
I don't think it's as bad as it ever was. I think, you know, it did take some media attention or different things for it to change. Like, I referred, when I was speaking to the Lost Society of Ireland, I did refer to the time that it was the hurling All-Ireland went to a draw, and immediately the pundits were saying, oh yeah, the ladies will just have to change and it'll be played, you know, Sunday week, without any regard to us and the dedication we put in. You know, I was just, now they did go to an ad break immediately after, and I think that man was corrected or told to be careful of what he said, but there can be that kind of attitude, you know, that we're second class and that, but I do think it's changing, and I don't think it's as prominent as, I think, you know, maybe a minority do seem to have that attitude, but like in reference to the lads, say that the men, our counterparts, are usually, you know, they admire us and would have great respect for us. And
would the same problem be there at club level?
Work harder to get more. Yeah. You know, to get as much.
But would the same problem be there at club level, do you think? I mean, would people on the panel, maybe not your own club, but other clubs, say it's difficult to get the same kudos, it's difficult to say get the same facilities, the same training time, the pitches?
It can be, yeah. Like, I'm lucky in my club, my mom and others would have gone on to a committee where it would have been a community pitch. So if they had put in the same hours and going to the meetings and doing different things, we would have had the same level of access, which is brilliant. But you do hear cases where, and it happened to us actually, a senior training, we would have been put off the pitch, senior women put off onto a training pitch for an underage training. Like, that happened before, you know, and that's very degrading.
Really?
So it does still happen, you know, but possibly less and less. And I do think, you know, counties, like our county final would have been played in CIT the last few years, which adds to the whole occasion, and it being in a bigger stadium with, you know, it looks the part and it's more right, and it, you know, it adds to the whole occasion, as I said. Whereas before I would have been in one or two club pitches that, you know, wouldn't help with that whole sense of importance. So, you know, it's important that we, the women, get access to the big pitches and the county pitches even once a year. If that change could be made, it would be a huge improvement. Like, I played in Thurles, I played in the O'More Park in Laois, you know, the big stadiums, and that's where you want to be playing, and you want to be, you know, be able to showcase what you can do on a major pitch on the grounds that are there, you know.
Well, there is sometimes an argument about sort of having a major inter-county fixture on the same day as a men's one, but then the other argument is that the argument being that you open up this game to a whole new audience, but then the other argument is that well, you're kind of relegating it then to being a kind of a preview game as opposed to being a game in its own right. How do you feel about that?
I would be all for having it before another match. Like, it's exposure. The more exposure you get, the better. I remember we were playing a practice match below in Limerick, and there was two men down the J pitch, and I was coming in half time, or I just overheard them speaking, and I'd say it was the first time they saw a women's game live, and they were amazed and very taken aback by the level, and, you know, they got interest from being exposed to that by chance now in that case. But you know, I do think if those options can be created, then it might heighten the awareness and people might pay more attention, and then maybe eventually progress to having standalone games. I would say for the All-Ireland final, it's great that the younger people can come and watch and not be worried about having to get tickets.
Yeah,
you know, whereas happens sometimes is if it's a big men's match, the women or our families mightn't have access to any match tickets, which I know happens with the women's rugby. They find it very hard. They played in Twickenham before.
That's right.
And their families couldn't get tickets because it was on before the...
Yeah, and I recall a kind of a controversy, I think it was last year in the FAI Cup final, where the women's game had been played previous to the men's game, and the women's game went to penalties. And while the penalties were being taken, the lads went out and started warming up, and it was seen as to be a huge show of disrespect. But I'm quite sure those things could be sorted out. It's interesting you mentioned the panel discussion and the panel perception of the women's game. I thought it was really interesting. I remember tweeting it at the time. They had an end of year review of this year's Gaelic football, and they had 9 men on a couch in the RTE studio. And for me, I suppose, maybe being involved in politics and very, very keenly aware of gender balance in lots of things, to have 9 guys talking about the sporting year or the GEA year and not one woman involved, to me seems strange, but maybe to your average viewer it doesn't seem strange. Is that the kind of thing we need to change as well?
Yeah, but not for the sake of just having a woman there, someone who knows her stuff and, you know, have a... I suppose has the knowledge, that would be important. You know, not having someone there for the sake of it. Mm. But yeah, like, there is that kind of an all boys club sometimes that can appear. Now, the thing with RTE is that they only show the Camogie All Ireland final. Well, this year they show the semis as well. But the lack of exposure on the main games, like, if you watch RTE and their clips of, you know, the highlights of the year, how many times does the G females feature? None, you know, and I think that's something that we need to tap into as well and maybe work on, because for any outsider looking in and watching the RT and not seeing a female, they mightn't be aware that there is Gaelic games, you know, for women. So all these little things do make a difference.
So do you find, like
Gaelic Car on the other hand have been amazing, because
they have been amazing,
followed us and promoted us and broadcasted it when no one else is there. Now, there is that issue of if it's on telly, people don't travel, but, you know, it's important that people have access to and exposure to the games.
But do you find yourself being a high-profile women's sports person, that automatically you kind of are asked these questions, that you automatically become a campaigner, or would you just rather be just a sports person?
I think you find yourself, if you have a voice and if people want to hear it, and if you feel like you can make a positive impact, I do think it's important that you make use of that voice. And I think it's just happened by chance if people ask me my opinion, or, you know, recently I've actually done some work with TG Carr doing commentary and that, so that's just kind of been a natural progression from my retirement.
Right, okay. People are asking you more questions. You came out last year in advance of the marriage equality referendum, member of the LGBT community. You've been married since to Meg. Was that difficult for you to make that transition, something that's pretty private, to something that's very public? Was that a difficult decision to make, or was it something that you wanted to do because of the referendum at the time?
I had to weigh up my options and be aware, as a teacher at the time, I could have been fired, like, you know, could have been a possibility, and that was probably unlikely. But, you know, when you say I came out, it was a public coming out, whereas I have been, you know, living normally, and
Anybody who knew you knew.
I got out like 8 years, 9 years at that time, so, you know, it wasn't a useless phrase. Anyone who knew me would have known, and I just felt it was important to do it because of the referendum coming up, and, you know, I thought that the normal story and people knowing me, you know, that they could have relate to it maybe, and I think it's important for people to know that, you know, there are people who are gay everywhere and in every facet of life, and, you know, I was a positive role model in other things, and I thought it was important to be that, and just be open about it, because there's nothing to hide, and I felt maybe if I didn't be more public about it, that people might think that there was a reason I wasn't.
Right.
You know, which is, you know, I didn't want that to be thought of, or that to be the case.
And you mentioned your mum there being heavily involved in the club. I believe yourself and your mum and some of your families were out canvassing?
They were, yeah.
How'd you find that experience?
Door to door, the embarrassing act of having to go around door to door to ask for to get the yes vote.
Yeah.
You know, it worked. A lot of people spent many nights out helping and canvassing.
Did you find that difficult experience? I remember canvassing myself for that referendum, and, you know, people were kind of opening their hearts up really and saying, look, this is something I want to happen in my life, and here's my partner, or here's my boyfriend, here's my girlfriend. Yeah. It wasn't, like, in retrospect, we can kind of think that it was wonderfully positive, but to be honest, there were pretty ugly things said, and there were some nights that were pretty hard for people to take. Did you find it overall a positive experience, or were there moments where you went home after a night's canvassing or a night's discussion and go, why do I have to do this?
There was always one or two negative comments every night we did go out, but, you know, you try not to think of those ones and look at the positives. And also, I guess my thinking these days is, like, their response is a reflection on themselves rather than on me, so they have their own issues they're trying to deal with, and maybe they're not educated, or maybe they're a bit ignorant of it. And also, I'd hope that those people, a lot of them would have changed their minds, having seen that, you know, the world didn't end, or the sky didn't fall. Basically, that things didn't end up a mess, like, you know, that life went on and the vote didn't really change anyone.
But
for everyone that wants to get married.
But can I ask you about the sort of the LGBT homophobia issue in sport? I mean, for my involvement in women's sport, and I've taken some, you know, some soccer teams, some Gaelic teams in school and in clubs and that. Women's sport seems to be an awful lot more understanding of LGBT people, of LGBT players, of relationships and all the rest of it. Why is it that, I think, we've only necessarily had one high-profile GA player to come out about his sexuality? What is it that men's sport doesn't seem to be able to embrace the that open-mindedness when it comes to LGBT issues? Is it the last big barrier that we have to overcome in Irish society? Because politics seems to have made it have jumped that barrier. Media seems to have done it too. The referendum brought out a lot of positivity, even though we spoke about the negativity. But still, in sport, in the dressing room culture, in lad sport, doesn't necessarily seem to be the kind of place where people are willing to come out and speak openly or be open about their sexuality. Would you agree with that?
Well, the facts speak for themselves. I mean, there hasn't really been any other high profile players come out bar Donalogue. I do know one or two now in the clubs who have, but I guess they don't feel comfortable or that they're going to be safe in a safe environment. And I think, you know, maybe the GAA need to do more. And I saw a documentary recently in the soccer in England, and how you know, I guess a lot about what is chanted in the stadium wouldn't be acceptable outside it, but there seemed to be this culture or acceptance of this kind of behaviour, which is totally and utterly unacceptable.
Yeah, I saw the documentary. It's about Justin Fastenew,
and no one comes out, the harder it is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how do you think we can? I mean, you've spoken about the restrictions in school. I mean, we had, when we were in government, we did amend Section 37 of the Employment Equality Act to ensure that LGBT teachers or unmarried teachers who are parents or whatever, people whose lifestyles didn't necessarily fit in with the Catholic ethos of the school, weren't going to have their employment prospects hampered. But you know, like, what else can we do in order to, you know, not just for LGBT players that they can feel at ease with being who they are, but for straight people to be much more accepting? I mean, do you think the GAA are doing enough? The FEI are doing enough? The IRFU are doing enough?
I think, or
is it a wider societal thing? Is it a wider societal thing than just the sporting organisations?
I think maybe, you know, no better place to start it when people are younger and showing that acceptance at club level and allowing people to be individual and unique and not having this kind of, you know, guys have to wear blue and they have to be macho and they can't talk about their feelings, you know, that kind of a stereotype place on kids. And they're very receptive to it, like, you know, a lot of, say, even young girls hearing that, you know, soccer is for boys and all this kind of talk. So I think just a bit of more openness maybe with the coaches and parents and allowing kids to be themselves, essentially. And, you know, I think we're all responsible for that, creating that kind of environment where players can eventually just, you know, live their life and be who they are and be with who they want to be. But it's not an easy thing, and it does take a bit of change. But I do see it in secondary schools now, you know, students being a lot more comfortable, being open and out about their sexuality and not being such a huge thing, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely not anymore.
Did you have come across homophobia on the pitch?
Never, not once, no, which is a great thing to be able to say. Not one negative comment or slur, no.
That's a great thing to be able to say.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. And how do you feel then about, you know, about the wider context in which we're operating now? I mean, in Ireland, we feel that we've come a huge way in advocating LGBT rights, of having constitutional equality, legal equality across the board. But then you have in America, you've the vice president that's just been elected has a bit of a checkered record when it comes to LGBT rights. He's very much against them. He believes in conversion therapy and all this sort of stuff. You know what's happening in Russia. You know the far right are doing quite well across Europe. You know, even in the UK, UKIP, who have a pretty homophobic background, and their new leader has a lot of opinions back in the day of in this area. Do you worry about where international views are going on LGBT rights, or do you feel that Ireland can be a beacon of light across the world, or am I overstating it? Because I sometimes wonder, you know, are we getting better, or are we maybe being a little bit, you know, making assumptions about where everybody's mindset is? Because I suppose we can always go back.
Yeah, well, I think it's important not to make the assumptions that everything is rosy, because then I guess you get a reality check. But Ireland definitely has, you know, it's been a wonderful story. And I remember we went away soon after and seeing the stories, you know, from abroad, coming from Ireland, and, you know, even Sky, the way they showcased it, it was wonderful, and such the first country to be voting it in was amazing. But I would worry, you know, the fact that the vice president of America, as you say, or the vice president elect, would be, you know, thinking that the conversion therapy is possible. I mean, it's sad and it's worrying, definitely, because America definitely is, you know, it does kind of trickle down into other countries, And I think, you know, it is a backward step, obviously, and definitely I would be concerned and worried. And, you know, when the powers that be have that control over innocent young people, it's very damaging and worrying, and I don't know, it's scary, really.
So we can't be complacent. I suppose, just on a happier note, which of your 10 All-Ireland finals do you pick out as being... Because we're just chatting here to Donny, who does all the technical stuff here with me. And I was saying that, you know, when I was in primary school, I took the girls' football team. It was all girls' team. Yeah. And we got to 6 Cumberland One School finals, and we lost 1. And that's the one that bugs me. It's I still think about it. But is there one final of the 10 that you are most satisfied when you think back?
Well, it's hard to pick one right now, but I love...
I bet you pick one against Dublin.
The first line was such a buzz.
Right.
And, you know, everything was new, and even the crowd ran onto the pitch, and we were, you know, everything was amazing, and it was all new and fresh. And then definitely the one against Dublin in 2014 when we had the comeback, that was amazing because we went throughout the match, it was a roller coaster of emotions. We were losing, feeling devastated, then we kept going, and then we had the elation at the end, and it wasn't relief, which is it we would have felt in other games. It was more just elation and joy and coming back from the death, like, and, you know, it was incredible, and those memories will always stay with me. And we had an amazing record in Quebec. Like, I don't think there are too many more teams can say they won every match in all Ireland they competed in Quebec.
Well,
so definitely for me the first, and then 2014.
Well, Donny here is gesturing at me, and he's raising his fists, and he's doing kind of a lap of honour here around the studio. But look, your best memory of the last final is not as good a memory for me. But Valerie McCaughey, thanks for everything you've done, and thanks for being so outspoken, and thanks for being my guest on The Better Side.
Thank you.